day to everyone. God, thank you, Jermaine. Everyone's having a pleasant evening as I am. A house full of cats tonight. I'm this roaming top cat Figaro, that is the ethereal wandering astral projection cat. He's been wandering around and moving in today from his astral journey, greeting me with big yellow eyes. Tonight's episode, and all men and women players, of course, is from last week, All the World of Sage. All the World of Sage, all men and women players. We're going to talk about the role of identity, and various other topics as they come to me and my wondrously holographic mind. This is the Crystal Silence League Radio Hour, so get your crystal balls ready. If you don't own a crystal ball, why don't you by now? This is episode 30 episodes, a triumvirate of episodes. So please grab your crystal ball, a glass of water. How about a shiny object of some sort, and join us back in about a minute or so while you collect yourselves and I collect myself. And if you like just a frosty or warm or comforting beverage of some sort, and we'll be right back. St. Germain, Crystal Silence League Radio Hour. Of course, for those of you new to us, the Crystal Silence League was founded around 1917 by Mr. Claude Alexander Conlin, a spiritual adept who was also a vaudeville mind reader and psychic entertainer. The Crystal Silence League was founded with the intention of distributing positive prayer and affirmation to those in need of such. And when Mr. Conlin passed into the silence around 1958, he took the Crystal Silence League with him until it was revived a few years ago by spiritual adepts of the Missionary Independent Spiritual Church, revisioned online at www.crystalsilenceleague.org. You can go there at any time and post prayer. Prayer is always free. Of course, listeners, as we are talking about in chat, always encouraged to call in and listen and speak with the host on the air at 657-383-0525. You can ask questions on any topic because I am, of course, omniscient. Get a free reading if you like. I'll do a reading for you. I don't care. And we talk about crystals on the show. So our crystal of the day, in fact, is Merlinite. And yes, it is named after the wizard Merlin because it's considered the stone of wizards. And Merlin is a potent stone for shamans. Wow, omniscient. Yes, and someone else screams, Merlinite. Yay, Merlinite. A beautiful stone it is indeed. And you can see it on our little slideshow. Very pretty stone. It's a potent stone used by wizards and shamans and magicians of all sort. Very good in creating a link between the mundane mind and the divine mind. can help you remove the veil separating the mundane world and the supramundane world. You can use it for astral projection, help you to delve into deeper spiritual knowledge and awareness. It helps you go into past life studies. It can help you with spiritual communication with those who have passed beyond the veil. If you're a student of magic, it can help you learn quicker. It can help you open psychic channeling. If you're studying divination, scrying, astrology, tarot, numerology, and other occult sciences, it can help you learn that as well. The chakras it's mostly associated with is the third eye chakra. This is a very good stone, and it's the a stone I particularly like because it's associated with Saint Germain. So we do love that. We do study the practical use of crystals and crystal balls here, and at the end of the show, if there's time, we're going to practice a projection for self-mastery and individual power. Tonight we're going to discuss identity. And identity is something I'm very interested in. When the internet first came into my sphere around early to mid-90s, it became very obvious that you could be anybody you wanted to be on the internet. I was involved at that time in Usenet groups, and the rise of various forums became very interesting to me because people could be quite different online than they were in real life. The on Buddhist forums, for instance, you had people who were enlightened masters. They had the role of enlightened masters, and you knew these people in real life were nothing like that. It was very interesting. Someone would be, especially when chat rooms came, people would come on and admonish people for having any kind of passion or emotion or flaws. And I became very sarcastic about this when I was a moderator on a Buddhist forum. I said I'm honored to be in a room full of enlightened masters such as you guys. And sometimes you'd look at the profile, and some of these people were 16 years old, and already they'd achieved levels of enlightenment that Buddha himself would envy. You see this quite a bit. You'll see this quite a bit, especially when Wiki came along and Google and stuff. People could cut and paste long diatribes of wisdom and seem to be experts on anything. You know, hence my joke earlier about being omniscient. It's easy to be omniscient with the internet. And so often you'll see people with online identities that have nothing to do with real life. And this brings us up with the danger of online dating, which may be the topic of another episode. You know, this actually happened to me. I met someone online and had quite a relationship with them online, and then talked to them on the phone and then met them in person. And it was a year later until I realized I'm actually in a relationship with somebody who doesn't exist. And this may have happened to many of you. The chameleon personality syndrome, where someone adopts a mask and they pretend to be someone in order to get what they want from the world. And as you get to know them, you realize this is something totally different. Now, there is a red flag for this. If someone you're getting to know in a relationship, and this is a red flag that psychologists will tell you, if someone is utterly different around different people, like if someone you're getting involved with exhibits an entirely different personality around their friends than they do with you, this is a red flag. Their family, they just have an entirely different personality shift. Now, everybody is slightly different. You know, like if a guy's, you know, like me, we get around our friends, we tend to get a little more immature. You know, we might goof around with them and stuff. But you're always yourself. You know, I might get around my friends and goof off, you know, and make jokes and stuff, you know, be a little more immature. But I'm always me. I am always me. On the radio, I'm a little more formal. When I'm doing readings, I might be a little more sanctimonious or something, but I'm always me. You can always recognize me, but if someone is entirely a different personality, it's a red flag. They're chameleons. They wear masks, and they're doing this to get what they want. They're acting in a contrived manner to get a desired result. And so we go into this whole idea of who are we? You know, who are we really? And maybe a great many people are really nobody. We don't have an inner core. And maybe all we do is play tapes. We take bits and pieces of other people and put them together like jigsaw puzzles. And that's who we are. Do you believe that? I'd like to hear phone calls on this. Do you believe that we actually are born with a personality, that we're born with an identity? Or do we put ourselves together based on people we admire? Do we put ourselves together on role models? Are we who we are because of the people that we're around? And I'm so glad you asked that. We have someone is lacking in inner core, the same thing as anatta. And anatta is a topic, notes of which I have before me, and I'm segueing into that very topic, Nagasiva. We're going to talk about anatta in just a few minutes. In fact, if we don't get any phone calls, I'm going to pontificate quite a bit about anatta 101. Anatta is a doctrine which is one of the most important teachings of Buddhism, and it's the most distinctive feature of Buddhism, in fact. Yay, he says, fun. But before we get into anatta, we are going to have our online prayers, because anatta is a topic that's very deep, even on the most basic level. And as you know, on the Crystal Silence League, people post hundreds of prayers, often a day, and prayer is always free on the Crystal Silence League. So I would like to go ahead and read our online prayers. Prayers are always identified, yay, prayers, by prayer ID number only and by initials. So please join me in praying for the following individuals, and this is a small percentage of prayers. Pastors of the Crystal Silence League print out many pages of these a day, and we put them on our altars and pray daily for individuals who post on the Crystal Silence League website, just as Mr. Conlon used to do for prayers that were mailed to him on postcards and in letters. Prayer ID number 40693 TW, who is trying to get her motivation back to be inspired to regain her activities, sports, swimming, reading, dancing, and running. She needs a recharge of her spiritual batteries. And prayer ID number 40692, JR, needs apparently was fired from his job for doing the right thing and needs employment very badly before his unemployment runs out. Prayer ID number 40691, KL, needs love in her life, needs love very much in her life, and very stressed because she can't find love. And prayer ID number 40691, that's the one I just did, KL. Prayer ID number 40690, AT, needs to pass a test, and hopes that we pray for her to do that. Prayer ID number 40689, MC, needs to have bad luck removed from her life and needs her old lover C back. Prayer ID number 40688, CO, is praying for her friend G that he gets rid of the demon of alcoholism. Prayer ID number 40687, S, needs his enemy, Mr. A, to return that which was stolen from him. Prayer ID number 40686, TS, needs IO to move to another state and never return. She needs a hot foot. Prayer ID number 40685, HRH, needs insurance claim to be successful so that the funds to remake public artwork will be accomplished. Prayer ID number 40684, TS, prays for her children and her grandchildren. They need God's protection. Prayer ID number 40683, HK, needs ZB to go away and for SB to protect her from him. Prayer ID number 40682 also needs perfect mental health provider to be sent their way. An appropriate mental health provider, I would think. Prayer ID number 40681WW wishes that her son T would find a girlfriend appropriate for him, who would care for him and love him. Prayer ID number 40680, P.A., wants her lost love to return to her and prays that he returns back into her life and that all obstacles between them be removed that hinders their love. And prayer ID number 40679 wants justice and peace for her 6-year-old daughter. Prayer ID number 40678, B.D., prays for a financial miracle. Prayer ID number 40677, BD, needs protection to be safe at work. She's going to another city for 2 weeks and needs safe travel and safe residence while she's there. And also prayer for removal of curses and negative energies. And finally, we have prayer ID number 40675, A and M CP, who is a couple, who prays for a peaceful wedding. They're having a courthouse ceremony on the 14th of August, big reception, and they wish for everything to be smooth and peaceful and joyous, and may that be so. And now let's have a moment of silence for all those in need of prayer and positive affirmation. And who we are. Often we define ourselves as something. We search for identity. We are a certain thing. We identify ourselves with trauma. Have you noticed that? We like to look for a victim mindset sometimes. We're offended so easily by things. It seems to be the thing to do to be offended now. I'm offended at being something. My heavenly father can kick your heavenly father's ass. That's a big thing. Differences in religion. Ethnic differences. Your people oppressed my people. If you look historically, we can all do that. Everybody has been oppressed by somebody historically if you go back far enough. I'm a Cherokee. Everybody oppressed me. My goodness. Every time I look at a $20 bill, I think about Andrew Jackson and the Trail of Tears. And wasn't that funny? There was a choice. There was a choice between Monroe and Jackson to replace, with a lady. And so I think, okay, good. They're going to kick Andrew Jackson off, the genocidal racist who blackmailed, bribed, intimidated, and forged signatures. He was a traitor. He was a criminal. and get rid of him and put a deserving lady on the bill. But instead, no, the American people voted Monroe, who was the founder of our monetary system and who set up our banking system. They said, yeah, get rid of him on the money. He's not appropriate. Monroe, who founded our monetary system, kick him off the money, not Jackson, the genocidal racist. Okay. Of course, Donald Trump is also leading the Republican nominations. So, I love America, but sometimes we make weird decisions, folks, weird decisions. And by the way, I've been watching Fox News this week, and I've made a list of everything you have missed. I've got it right here. This is a list of everything you've missed that's pertinent and logical and important for you to know that's been on Fox News this week. And I'm going to read it aloud to you now. And that's it. Anatta, Anatta Doctrine. In Buddhism, the Anatta Doctrine is probably the most important, distinctive aspect of Buddhism. Of all the world's major religions, only Buddhism has the doctrine of Anatta. Only Buddhism denies, and here it goes, only Buddhism denies or is agnostic about the existence of a soul. Now, all the Abrahamic religions, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, teaches that every soul will be judged at the end of the world. It will be weighed. And it will be determined whether the individual is punished by hell or rewarded by eternal life in heaven. Buddhism teaches that there's no such thing as a soul or a true permanent self. Now, in Buddhism, there's no pervading or surviving self such as the Atman. The Atman in Hinduism is a soul. It's an identity that in reincarnation is passed from life to life until it is free of karma. Meditation leads to the awareness that the idea of self or Atman is a mere illusion. Now, Buddhism is the only major religion that denies the existence of a metaphysical entity, which is usually called a self or soul. Now, this creates confusion in people who are studying. Studying and says, well, then what is this reincarnation, this rebirth stuff? Well, that we'll get into that. Now, Buddhism is usually divided into two major schools, Theravada and Mahayana, which have some very major differences, but both schools agree on anatta. Now, the negation of this imperishable Atman is the common characteristic of all dogmatic systems of Theravada and Mahayana. Therefore, no reason to assume that Buddhist tradition, which is in complete agreement on this point, has deviated from the Buddha's original teaching. Now, there are schools today that try to teach Buddhism without beliefs, and they just totally avoid things like rebirth and things like that, but the original teaching of the Buddha says anatta, anatta, anatta. But although anatta is so important and distinctive and universally accepted by Buddhists, it's still one of the most misunderstood and misinterpreted and distorted of all the teachings. All you have to do is get on a Buddhist website and see how convoluted it is. I'm going to try to get down to the very core of it. There were certain schools that rose over the year that had subtle doctrines of self and tried to say that some of the Buddha's teachings had a subtle doctrine of self. I can't think of any of the names of them right now, Varvastivadins, et cetera, but this was never been backed up. The controversy over the anatta doctrine seems to be based on a deep fear, a deep fear of the denial of the existence of a soul. People, we're very attached to our lives, and we like to believe that there exists somewhere something everlasting, eternal, and permanent inside of us, identity. And when someone comes along and tells us that there's nothing permanent inside of us, nothing which we continually, eternally, such as a soul, we become frightened. We cling very, very tightly to our beliefs and our stuff. You know what? We're afraid of fear of death. We're afraid of losing our stuff. Fear of death is afraid of losing our stuff, and by our stuff, I don't mean just our cars and our televisions and boats, although that's part of it, but also the things by which we define ourselves, our beliefs, our identity. You know, I am a fill-in-the-blank Christian, Muslim, Jew, Buddhist. I am my ancestors. I am my ancestral identity. I am this whole core of beliefs by which I identify myself. We're afraid of losing all of that. That's why we're afraid of death. We're afraid of the moment of death. All that goes away. So we're afraid of that. What will become of us in the future? We have a fear of extinction, which is nihilism. Now, Buddha understood this, and we can see this in the story of Vajragoda, who, like many, many people, his time and now was frightened by this Anatta doctrine. Vajragoda was an ascetic. He was a monk who once went to the Buddha, and he asked the Buddha, "Is there Atta? Is there a soul?" And Buddha didn't answer. He remained silent. And he asked again, "Is there no Atta?" And Buddha remained silent. He did not answer. This is the one time in 15 feet of literature where Buddha was asked directly, and he didn't answer. After Vajragoda went away, Buddha explained to Ananda why he remained silent. Buddha explained that he knew that Vajragoda was very confused in his thinking about it, and if he were to respond that there does exist Atta, then he'd be expounding an eternalist view, the eternal soul theory, which he did not agree. But if he were to say that Atta did not exist, then Vajragoda might think that he was expounding the annihilationist view, that a person is nothing but a psychophysical organism, which will be completely annihilated by death. He did not agree, because that view denies karma, rebirth, and dependent origination. Buddha didn't agree with that either. Buddha teaches, in fact, that people are reborn with relinking consciousness, a rebirth consciousness which does not transmigrate from the previous existence, but which comes into existence by means of conditions included in the previous existences, conditions such as karma. Thus, a reborn person is not the same as the one who has died, nor is he the reborn person entirely different from the one who has died. The metaphors that are usually used is like if you light one candle off another, the flame from the new candle is not a different flame, but nor is it the same flame. And so that's kind of cool. You know, is it a different flame? No. Well, is it the same flame? No. It's a flame that arose from the conditions of the previous flame. But more importantly, no metaphysical entity, no soul, and no kind of spiritual self continues from one existence to another in Buddha's teachings. But that's too difficult for Vajragoda, and really too difficult for most of us. And, at the beginning anyway, it takes a lot of study of Buddhism before you're ready to really get your mind around that. Buddha wanted to wait for a while until Vajragoda would mature in intellect. And you see, Buddha was not a computer who gave automatic answers to every question. He taught according to the spiritual development of the people who asked their questions. And that's one of the talents of a Buddha. He can size up a person and know how to teach them. That's why you'll sometimes get different answers to the same question throughout the Pali Canon. People say, well, there's no system here. He gives different answers. There's no continuity. Well, it depends on who you are, how much you know and where you are. He would give a king, a priest, a monk, and a villager different answers depending on their knowledge. As it happened, Vajragoda advanced spiritually through meditation, and he realized the no-soul nature of all things and became an arahant. He became enlightened. Unfortunately, though, that story, taken out of context, is used by some scholars to try to prove that Buddha did not really deny the existence of Atta, that he was agnostic about it. So before this, Brahmanism, which used to be called Hinduism, was the prevailing religion in India, and it teaches the doctrine of Atta, which is usually translated as soul or self. And when Buddha appeared, he said there is no such thing. And he proclaimed it only 5 days after his first sermon, after his enlightenment. And that was how important it was to him. That was really the defining factor of enlightenment, really. When you become a streamer or a sotapanna, you've understood no self. That's the first step of enlightenment. You've grasped no self. You've grasped anatta. And Atta is the inner core of anything, the inner core of a tree, the inner core of anything. So the inner core means authority. Inner core means the ability to make, to give orders. For anything to be called Atta, it's got to have the power to exercise authority. There's a lot of nuances to Atta. So Atta is soul, a spiritual entity inside of all people. Now, what's important, though, is that Atta is eternal. It's unchangeable, it's immutable, and it continues. Now, Buddha denied all this. According to Buddha, there's nothing we can call an inner core, which is eternal, blissful, unchangeable. There's nothing we can call upon to exercise authority over the nature of anything, including ourselves. There's no doer apart from doing, and no experiencer apart from experiencing. Brothers, if you understand that, you're halfway there. No doer apart from doing, no experiencer apart from experiencing. There's nothing or no one which is omnipotent, because everything is at the mercy of the constant creation and dissolution of conditioned things. There's only the aggregates, which is a topic for another discussion. And there are only two groups of phenomena in this existence, mind and matter. Apart from mind and matter, there exists nothing whatsoever that we can call atta. There's, however, a big mistake a lot of people make, and that is that Buddha taught that there's no such thing as a person, no such thing as an individual. That's not true. There are two levels of teaching. There's the mundane teaching and supramundane teaching. The idea is that on the supramundane level, there is no self. There is no self. On the mundane level, there is a human being. I mean, obviously you exist. Now, I want to tell you, I had a teacher in Indiana, a wonderful monk, Bhikkhu Anananda, and we called him Bhikkhu Andy, and he was really funny, and people would say, "Does this mean I don't exist?" And he would reach over and pinch you. You go, "Ow, ow." He goes, guess what? You exist. He goes, "Guess you exist." It was funny. He'd pinch you. "Ow. You exist. Look there, you exist." So there's a thing that can happen when you start thinking that you don't exist. You can get a mental disorder. You know, you think you don't exist, and you get this. It's called dissociative personality disorder, where you think you don't exist, and that's a real danger. You do exist. The human being does exist. You just don't exist in a way you think you do, and the self exists on a mundane level. That's what we must understand. The self exists on a mundane level, just not on an ultimate level. The self is a functional construction of the skandhas, or the khandhas, or the bundles, which are five elements, and again, that's topic of another discussion, that allow us to function in life. It's like five horses pulling a cart. They have to pull in the same direction. So the self is a series of processes of the body and mental processes that create this idea of self. But there's no, you take those processes away and the whole idea of self falls apart. And one of the things you do in meditation is you examine these five components, and you cannot find anything there. No inner core. So why are we all different? How come I'm different from you? Why is there John and Billy and Becky and Susie, etc.? Well, these conditions are all different. These conditions are all different. And first of all, there's that rebirth consciousness, the conditions you bring in from another life. What's called putta karma. From the Bhanga Chitta, which is the stream of consciousness, comes the Putta Karma. This is what, when I die, I have a last moment of consciousness. This becomes the first moment of consciousness of another being. So the life of John Saint Germain is not wasted. It may become, it can become a lot of things, but say it's fortunate enough to become reborn in the human. Everything that I've experienced and everything that was experienced before me continues as a new being. That conditions that new being. So there's that. Then there's genetics. Not everything is karma. Then there's genetics. There's inherited traits from the parents. Then there's environment. There's how you react to the environment. That's part of volition and perception. That's two of the khandhas. Volition and perception are two of the khandhas. How you react to your environment. So all these go into making the human being. So there is a human being, there is an individual. Although, I will tell you this, Buddha once said There's no amount of evil that does not arise from the belief in soul theory. It's not accurate to say that Buddha did not deny Atta. Buddha did deny Atta. And Buddha once said, I got a note here, where can I find it? Oh yeah, I do not see a soul theory which, if accepted, does not lead to the arising of grief, lamentation, suffering, distress, and tribulation. Since neither self nor anything pertaining to self can truly be found, is not the speculative view that the universe is Atta wholly and completely foolish? Now, this is a very tough statement, because that basically is translated as saying, the belief in a creator God, the belief in a creator, is wholly and completely foolish. Buddha teaches that belief in Atta is a wrong view, which will lead to misery. Wrong views must be rejected because they're a source of wrong and evil aspirations and conduct. This is why Buddhism is often called an atheistic religion. It's really not true. Buddhism is a non-theistic religion because it simply doesn't come up. It's simply not, Buddha calls it a wrong question. People have said, there is a famous, and I love this, a famous sutta where a man comes in and he says, hey Buddha, hey man, hey you. He said, if you'll tell me, is there a soul, is there not a soul? Does the universe have an end, does it not have an end? Is there a creator, is it not a creator? Then I'll follow you. And Buddha said, you know what? He said, you remind me of the man who was shot with a poisoned arrow. And before he would let anybody remove it, he wanted to know who shot the arrow, what the arrow was made of, what kind of feather was in it, where the archer came from, what his family name was, what he was wearing, where the clothes came from. He said, that man died before he got those answers, man. He said, I don't teach those things. He said, what I teach is suffering, the source of suffering, and how to end suffering. He said, you want to learn that? Follow me. And the guy said, hey, that makes sense. And of course, he followed Buddha. So we're not talking atheism here. We're talking just hardcore common sense. And Buddha looked at the world. He saw that people were arguing and fighting and killing each other because they said, hey, my God is better than your God. No, my God's better than your God. No, my God's better than your God. Hey, my theory of soul is better than your soul. And they were killing each other over it. And he said, that's a bunch of nonsense. He said, what we see here is the world is in trouble. We're in the here and now. And we got to put an end to it. And in the Majjhima Nikaya, which is it's the middle length discourses, he says that the belief in Atta is an idea which leads to selfishness and pride. He says, the perfect one, the sage, is free from any theory, for the perfect one, or the sage, has seen what corporality really is, and how it arises and passes away. He's seen what feeling is, and perception, and mental formations, and consciousness are, how they arise and pass away. Therefore I say that the sage has won complete deliverance through the extinction, fading away, disappearance, rejection, and casting out of all imaginings and conjectures of the inclinations to the vainglory of I and mine. So, do you understand what this would be? If you were to just get rid of the whole idea of I and mine, I want you to understand the greatest impact this would have on the world. Were you to dispose of the idea of I and mine, you and yours, we and ours, the greatest impact it would have on the world is that Facebook would disappear tomorrow. Let's pause for a word from our sponsors.
You are listening to the LMC Radio Network, whose art and information may be found on its webcast shows. The LMC Radio Network is a community radio alliance of metaphysical, spiritual, inspirational, and political justice broadcasters spanning a wide range of topics. Tune in Sundays for the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali. It features panel discussions on traditional African-American hoodoo spellcasting with members of the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, plus free readings and magical rootwork advice for live call-in clients. The longest-running conjure show in the universe, it may be heard from 3 o'clock to 4:30 Pacific Time, Sunday afternoons. On Mondays, get ready for Candelo's Corner, starring Candelo Cambisa. This is the meeting place for all esoteric traditions. Candela brings his insight as a Polero and eclectic spiritualist to his interviews with peers in Afro-Caribbean lineages, as well as representatives of numerous other spiritualities and religions. You can hear Candela's Corner Monday evenings from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. Tuesdays bring two wonderful shows to suit your taste. After the spiritual boost provided by the Reverend John St. Germain during the Crystal Silence League Hour, stay tuned for In the Streets with Beverly Smith. Beverly provides up-to-the-minute reports on civil and social rights issues. Her one-hour show airs on Tuesday evenings at 6 p.m. Pacific Time. On Wednesday nights, come out and join Liquid Libations. Andrea Weston hosts this informal sharing and showcasing of poetry, short stories, and spoken word performances, contributed by novices and professional wordsmiths. Call in and read your work. Liquid Libations may be heard on Wednesdays from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. On Thursdays, it's the Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield. In a variety show laced with country wit and biblical wisdom, the professor shares his knowledge of roots, delivers the lucky numbers, and explores the secrets of scriptural sorcery. From 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time, there's no end to the surprises. And on Saturdays, Kai Armand broadcasts On Sacred Ground, a tapestry of our times comprising history, ethnography, and shamanism, featuring the voices of the land and the deceased, aided by scholars, spirit workers, and environmentalists. Kai's show airs from noon to 1:30 p.m. Pacific Time. All shows on the LMC Radio Network are sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, located in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. Add 3 hours for Eastern, tax and license may apply, train departure times and Burma shape signs subject to change without notice. LMC.
And we're back. The topic, of course, is anatta, or no self, or self. And, of course, the views discussed during the show are for speculative and meditation and entertainment purposes only. It's not necessarily the, we're not necessarily proselytizing these views. This is a show of spiritual discussion. If you believe in a soul and you think when you die you're going to heaven and being embraced in the heavenly presence of Jehovah, my goodness, I applaud that and think rightly of you. Let's talk about the direct experience of anatta as it's taught by yogis and by experts of meditative contemplation, because anatta is extremely difficult to comprehend. It's almost impossible to comprehend intellectually. I have people that tell me, oh, yeah, I get not self. Yeah, I get it, which means to me exactly that, no, you don't, man. No, you don't. Because that means they're thinking in terms of dualism. They're thinking of self, this is self and this is not self. It's kind of like saying this is now, this is not now. No, you don't get it. It's like saying it's Monday and tomorrow's Friday. You know, you don't get it. You can speculate it about it. You can ponder about it. That's one kind of knowledge. That's intellectual knowledge. You can read books about it. But we're talking about direct comprehension of it. You can only really penetrate that during Vipassana meditation. And when yogis practice, they keep themselves aware of everything. When they see something, there are two things: the mind which sees and the object seen. Apart from these, there's nothing. More specifically, seeing is a process which depends on four things: the eye, the visible object, light, and attention to the object. If one of these conditions is lacking, no seeing occurs. If one does not have eyes, no soul can make you see. Only when all conditions are met does seeing consciousness arise. Now get that, seeing consciousness. No agent like atta is a part of this. When yogis note themselves thinking during meditation, they note thinking, and they find only thinking and the mind which notes it. They don't find a self or ego or atta. It's incorrect. And they do not find that I am thinking unless they add this idea as an afterthought. Now dig that. They don't find I am thinking. They note thinking. There's only thinking and the mind which notes it. In this process, the yogis can see the impermanence of mind and thought. One thought comes, then goes, another thought comes and goes, and this goes on and on and on. A new thought comes every moment, arises, disappears. They directly see the impermanence of thought. You directly experience anatta. They can also notice the impermanence of material things, such as physical pain, by noting the arising and disappearing of the pain in the body. They can see that all things are oppressed by rise and fall. All arising and disappearing. This oppression of phenomena by arising and disappearing is the characteristic of dukkha, which is sometimes interpreted as impermanence, suffering, unsatisfactory. And I'm going to tell you that the words karma, dukkha, and volition are interchangeable terms for the same thing. Karma, volition, and dukkha are interchangeable terms for the same quality of reality. And that is the second thing, if you can get your mind around, you're almost there. Your foot is poised above the stream. Dukkha, karma, and volition, which is one of the skandhas, are just the same thing. Three terms for the same thing. Buddha has said this himself. If you can get your mind around it, because karma is not the results of action. Karma is action. Vipaka is the fruits of karma. Karma, vipaka in Buddhism. Karma is the action. Karma and vipaka is the results of action. Karma is a volitional action of word, thought, mind. Word, thought, or action, physical action. It's a formation. Karma is a volition. Karma is a volition. It's a volitional act of thought, word, or mind. Vipaka is the fruiting of that. So karma, dukkha, volition. Three terms for the same thing. And if you can get your mind around that, not intellectually, but see that, man, you're almost there. So we desire things to be permanent, but we realize we don't have any power to make that impermanent things permanent. We grasp it, we hold on to it. That's why we fear that death thing, man. We realize we have no control or authority over things. No inner core, no atta, can be found in any observed phenomena. Yogis discover this in Vipassana meditation, because gradually you bring awareness and concentration to a high degree, and the yogis have penetrative knowledge into the true nature of mind and body. Impermanent, dukkha, and no self. Now, there is a discourse on this, which goes into great length about it. The Sermon at Benares, the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, the discourse on the characteristics of no soul, that is the second sermon of Buddha. And do you know the first person that Buddha met after his enlightenment was skeptical? Because he met someone, and they said, "You look happy. What's going on?" He goes, "I've achieved enlightenment." He goes, "Well, if you say so." Basically, he said, "Well, if you say so." And he was skeptical, which I think is really funny. There were skeptics in Buddha's day, man. There were atheists and skeptics and everything we have today. They existed in those days. Basically, what Buddha says in this, and it's very long, but I'll give you a synopsis. Buddha says, bhikkhus, which are priests, Buddhist monks, form is anatta. Form is not soul or self. Were form soul, then this form would not lead to affliction. And we could have it a form, let my form be thus, let my form be not thus. And since form is not soul, so it leads to affliction, and none can have it any other way. And then he goes through everything. I say it's very long. He goes through everything. He goes through and he says that feeling is not soul. Were feeling soul, then this feeling would not lead to affliction, and none can have this feeling. Let my feelings be thus, let my feelings be not thus. Perception is not soul. Mental formations are not soul. Consciousness is not soul. Were consciousness soul, then this consciousness would not lead to affliction, and one would have it of consciousness. Let my consciousness be thus. Let my consciousness be not thus. Consciousness cannot be atta because it is not under our control. Consciousness is unavoidably subject to afflictions, to sorrow, depression, and frustration. We cannot avoid being conscious of ugly sights, sounds, and sensations in the world. although we would like to arrange coming into contact with pleasant sensual objects only. So likewise in meditation, we'd love to be conscious only of meditation object, and we'd like to achieve stillness of mind and concentration, but this is not easy, and we cannot will it. If consciousness were atta, we could will our consciousness to be still and concentrated, and then we could proceed to the higher states of mind. Perhaps it would only take one day to advance to the higher stage of meditation, but in all cases, consciousness arises completely determined by circumstances and conditions, conditions which are not in our control. Therefore, consciousness cannot be atta. So he goes through every, with relentless logic, our man Buddha does not go by belief, does not go by speculation, with relentless logic. He goes through and says, where is it? So you go through, you look, you can't find it. Everything you find is impermanent, subject to change, subject to decay. And we don't find anything even approaching a permanent. So we think our mind is, but when you think mind is all physical. Mind is a physical phenomena. Thoughts arise from physical phenomena. And if you take away the physical phenomena of thought arising, what is there? I don't know what we imagine our soul is when we died. Do we imagine our thoughts continuing? And, I don't know. I know that spiritual contact creates a vibration in our brain that simulates thought. But the thoughts of spirits are really different. It's very strange. Free from the body, emotions and feelings are very different from what you feel when you're in the body. And spiritual contact is very, very different. And, spirits have to come way down to feel and experience what we feel. It's very different. So what I would like to do now, I think, and we haven't done one of these in a while, is those of you with crystal balls, why don't we get those out? And why don't we think about a few things? Think about some of these things. And let's dwell on this a little bit. A question that has actually been emailed to me is, someone says there's no continuity. If you lose weight, change your hair, cut your hair, develop new interests, everybody and yourself still thinks of you as yourself if there's no continuity. Why is that? Continuity is created in our minds. There is no continuity, but there's a relationship of cause and effect. If there's no Atman to go to different worlds, how do Buddha say we have past and future lives? The answer is mental and physical phenomena arise and disappear at every moment. They arise and disappear, and in their place, other new phenomena arise. But the new phenomena that arise are not totally different or new because they've arisen due to some cause. Karma causes the next life, and that next life is not totally new and different. Neither is it the same or identical. The cause causes the effect to arise, and that effect is not the result of just any cause, but of a specific cause. A strong relationship exists between the cause and the effect. In other words, that next life would not exist. It could not come into being without this life. They say in Buddhism that for a sentient being to arise, there has to be three things that occur. The egg of the mother, the seed of the father, and consciousness, the birth consciousness that is conditioned by the death consciousness of the previous individual. So this cause causes the effect to arise, and that effect has the relationship with the cause. So this cause imparts some of its similar qualities to the effect in the sense of causing certain qualities to arise. In this way, we have the notion of continuity, but actually everything is newly arisen at every moment, not only from life to life, but in this life. And that's what's important to understand, is that rebirth occurs moment by moment in this life. And so there's no reason to assume that process stops with the breaking apart of the body. Consciousness arises and falls. Rebirth, which is called Purnbhava, occurs in this life moment by moment. And this is what you learn in meditation. You learn that consciousness dies and reborns every moment and is conditioned. And that process, there's no reason to assume that it stops at death of the body. It continues. You're not the same person moment by moment. Consciousness changes. You're not the same person moment by moment. When you're born, if you could go back in time and snatch the baby you were and bring it to the person now, obviously you're not the same person as that newborn baby. If you could go into the future 10 years and take that person and set the three of you aside, you're not the same. Those three people are not the same, but you're not different either. You're connected by causality. And that's the same thing. That's the same concept. So that person who's connected to you by causality of rebirth, you're not the same, but you're not different either. Is that clear? Clear? Okay. Get your crystal balls out. We're going to do a meditation. If you don't have a meditation, God help you. Do this on your own. Yay. Gia has hit her ball. Yay. Take a deep breath and let it out. Head, they call me the same name moment by moment. You have about 30 different names. Come on. You have 30 different names. No one, they call you the same name moment by moment. You have at least 30 different names. Come on. Here we go. Is the music better? There we go. And take another breath. And this final breath, go. And let it out just like that. And now clearly and distinctly in your mind, clearly and distinctly in your mind, clearly and distinctly in your mind, concentrate on your breath, breath, in, and out. And as you breathe, become very aware of your body, how you firmly sit in your chair, how the chair firmly supports you. And as you breathe these firm and clear and relaxing breaths, your concentration may go down to your hand as it rests. And now focus your attention on your ball, your clear crystal ball. And as your thoughts focus on your ball, let your thoughts focus into your ball and concentrate on your dearest desire in your mind right now. What is it you utterly want? What is it you want right now? And take a deep breath, and every time you exhale, push the force of your desire into that ball. Deep breath. Exhale. And push the force of your desire into that ball. And know that you are the total master, the utter, you have utter control of your desire right now, and focus it into a tight laser beam. You inhale power from the universal mind, and you push it into the ball. And imagine the pressure building into that ball, like pressure building in a bottle as you shake it, and the ball vibrates and fills with that power. And as the ball fills with power, the power of your desire, for whatever it is you want in your life right now, now with this final breath, take a deep breath, and as you let it out, push from that ball, and let it go into the universe in all directions. Push it out, toward the horizon. Push that desire out with every bit of desire you have, and push it out as far as you can, and let it go. And let it go with wings, and now bring it back in. And know that the universe has answered yes. And just breathe. bring it back into you. And know that the universe has answered yes. And this has been John St. Germain with the Crystal Silence League Hour, coming up next in the streets with Beverly Smith. And we'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in.